Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Good morning. My name is Jesse, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to Grupo Lala's fourth quarter and full year 2019 results conference call. Please note that today's conference is being recorded and will be available for replay. I'll now turn the conference over to Mr. David Gonzalez, Grupo Lala's Head of Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks, operator, and good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us to review Lala's fourth quarter and full year 2019 financial results. The related press release was issued after yesterday's market close and has been posted to the investor relations section of our website, grupolala.com. As always, we have presentation slides to aid today's discussion. You can find the slides in the same location of our website, along with an updated fundamental spreadsheet. Participating on our call today are Arquímedes Celis, Grupo Lala's Chief Executive Officer, and Alberto Arellano, our Chief Financial Officer. Please move to slide two. Before we begin, I must remind you that discussion during the call today is likely to contain forward-looking statements. Forward-looking statements are statements other than those which are historical in nature. All forward-looking statements are subject to significant uncertainties, and actual results may differ materially from those suggested by the statements. Please move to slide three. Today's discussion will be as follows. Mr. Celis will briefly introduce himself and then provide an overview of his immediate priorities as Lala's new CEO. Mr. Arellano will follow, presenting key performance figures for the quarter and year on both a consolidated and regional basis. He will also discuss market conditions in each region, as well as provide an update on our key strategic initiatives in each. I will return to present Lala's financial results in more detail. Thereafter, we'll open the call up for questions. As always, I will be available for any follow-up questions you might have after today's conference call. It's now my pleasure to hand the call over to Mr. Celis.
Thank you, David. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us. As David said, I would like to start by providing some background information about myself. For those of you who don't know me from my time as Lala CEO between 2001 and 2015, I have worked in the food sector for over 45 years at some of Mexico's market leaders, such as Grupo Bimbo and Industrias Huachuco. Most of this time, I have worked in senior management roles. In addition to over 15 years as Lala CEO, I have been a member of the company's board of directors since 2015 and currently serve on the board of Pilgrim's Pride, a major food company that also operates internationally. During my tenure as CEO of Lala, we achieved compounded average organic sales growth of 11.6% per year and an EBITDA compounded average growth rate of just over 11%. Lala also evolved from being a regional player in Mexico to a national one and then expanded internationally. It also went from being a single product category company to a multi-category business. We did this by becoming a more innovative organization. For example, we acquired the bankrupt Nutri business in 2003 and turned it into the billion-dollar brand that it is today. We launched our own yogurt and cheeses, quickly taking market share from large incumbents. We also launched cold cuts in Mexico, strategically leveraging Lala's dominant refrigerated distribution network. My previous experience as CEO and as a director of Lala allows me to hit the ground running and begin making the necessary changes to stabilize our Mexico operations and reestablish a steady and profitable growth trajectory at this business. On the next slide are my immediate priorities to achieve this. Before discussing them, I think it is important to note here that I have been serving as the company CEO for less than 2 months now, and I am still conducting due diligence, working closely with what I consider to be a very capable operations team. They share my sense of urgency regarding our Mexico business, but all of us remain confident in our ability to execute our strategy to transform Lala from a dairy to a nutrition company, with the aim of achieving sustainable long-term growth. Please turn to slide 5. As things stand today, my most immediate priority, of course, is stabilizing our Mexico operations. To start, we need to fix the basics in order to substantially improve operating performance. This means rebalancing push and pull according to product demand, sell out, not sell in other words. It means reducing product waste throughout our supply chain in Mexico and minimizing raw material losses in our production processes. Another means to restore Mexico's profit levels is to calibrate expenses to be more in line with achievable growth levels. Specifically, we must resize sales expenses. We must also rationalize product launches, but also exploit underdeveloped areas of Lala's product portfolio. Lastly, while the company growth strategy will remain largely unchanged, we must prioritize the various strategic initiatives underway in Mexico, as well as adjust the speed at which we are executing them. As regards our businesses in Brazil, the U.S., and Central America, we will continue implementing the growth plans for each of these markets. As a final point, before I turn the call over to Alberto, it is my intention that my future successor will inherit a much stronger business than where it is today, one that will allow Lala's growth strategy to be fulfilled. Alberto, please go ahead.
Sorry for the delay, everyone. Thank you, Archimedes. Good morning. Please turn to slide 6 for our key consolidated figures. On a constant currency basis, fourth quarter brand sales increased 2% year over year, while full year branded sales grew 3.9% compared to 2018. Our consolidated EBITDA margin was 8.3% in the fourth quarter. Total EBITDA decreased 27.5% year over year, impacted by a 510 basis point decline in Mexico EBITDA margin. We will talk more about that further during the presentation. On a full year basis, Lala's EBITDA increased nearly 3%, with the corresponding margin expanding 10 basis points to 10.9%. Due to lower operating income in Mexico, fourth quarter and 2019 controlling net income decreased 87% and 3% year over year, respectively. Working capital landed at 0.6% of sales in the fourth quarter, propelled by a negative working capital need in Mexico. Lastly, our net debt to EBITDA ratio stood at 3x at the end of the year. Please move to slide 8 for quarterly highlights by region. Branded sales in Mexico increased 3.7% over the last year's quarter in a slowing economy that is affecting consumption levels. Along the same line, we have some difficulties to pass through inflation in our nutri business, which represents 40% of our volume. Sales were also impacted by the operational issues that Archimedes discussed earlier. Despite sales growth in milk and crema categories, feed rate problems impacted our market share in both line of businesses. On a positive note, Lala Cien, plant-based, and cocoa continue to show double-digit growth. Please move to slide 9. Poor execution led to significantly higher operating expenses, resulted in a 510 basis point decline in Mexico's EBITDA margin, which ended at 8.5% for the quarter. Overinvestment ahead of sales growth disrupted numerous areas of our operations. We increased our sales and marketing expenses and drove production to push products into the retailers. This imbalanced our demand planning, leading to raw material losses in our production plant. And as additional sales out did not come, volume pushed to the market partially returned as product waste. On the other hand, the problems that arose at our cheese plant have been resolved, although October, November, and December figures were still impacted. Among the higher operational costs were waste, transportation, and maintenance expenses. Please turn to slide 10. Brazil's economic environment remains challenging, affecting consumer spending and pressuring category prices in the fourth quarter. Yogurt demand in the value segment of the market increased, driving volume growth in this category and negatively affecting product mix. Despite the latter, we were not able to compensate the contraction of margarine volume that led to a 4.7% year-over-year decrease in Brazil sales. Encouraging signs are, A, we have resumed production of UHT milk in the country, and B, following 5 years of category contraction in dairy, the November-December market size reading stood flat versus last year. Lastly, we made modest positive gains in the market share in the refrigerated dairy and cheese category. Please move to slide 11. Brazil's EBITDA margin increased 320 basis points year over year to 10.3%. However, excluding a one-time tax benefit in the quarter, our margin was 4.7% down from 7.1% last year, due to a combination of higher milk costs and less favorable product mix that pressure our gross margin. During the fourth quarter, raw milk prices have been stabilized in Brazil. Nevertheless, during 2019, cost of raw milk stood 10% above 2018 levels. Please move to slide 12. Although U.S. sales declined 7.2% due to lower volume, we delivered a 400 basis point year-over-year increase in our EBITDA margin and 220 basis point sequential increase. Our 5.7% margin is a result of better pricing, operational improvement, and benefits behind the structural changes made over the last 2 years in the country. This is the highest margin since the business was acquired in the summer of 2016. Lastly, oval drinkable yogurt remains our strongest product category, where Lala stands as market leader in the U.S. Please turn to slide 13. Our Central America business is building strong fundamentals. Volume growth across the region helped drive sales 11.6% in U.S. dollar terms. This included double-digit volume growth in the value-added dairy and milk categories, while the ice cream market has started to recover, notably in Nicaragua. During the quarter, CAMP's EBITDA stood at break-even from a positive bottom-line result in Guatemala and Nicaragua that continues to fuel our expansion in the Costa Rican market. With that, I will turn the call over to David, who will review our financial results in more detail. David, please go ahead.
Thank you, Alberto. Please move to slide 15. The combination of price and product mix, as well as growth in beverages and other products, such as cold cuts, accounted for the 2% increase in constant currency standard sales in the fourth quarter. Milk sales grew just over 2%, driven by all regions except the U.S. Brazil's UHT milk production resumed, and Mexico had a positive mix behind Alaskan premium milk growth. In the other dairy segment, sales grew in Mexico and Central America, driven by cream and yogurt, offsetting lower prices and a less favorable mix in Brazil, as well as lower volumes in the U.S. In Mexico, plant-based beverages and cold cuts drove growth above 20% in the beverage and other segments. Please turn
Now look at sales by region. In Mexico, sales increased across all product segments, with most of the growth coming from creams, plant-based beverages, cold cups, yogurts, and milk. Milk sales recovered in Brazil, although this was not enough to offset lower prices in the other dairy segments, as less favorable product mix in this market, together with margarine volume contraction. Lower sales in the U.S. were due to volume declines stemming from price increases made during the summer. And in our Central America business, there was double-digit growth across all countries and categories, led by milk, yogurt, and ice cream. Please turn to slide 17. The higher expenses in Mexico, which Alberto had discussed earlier, accounted for the bulk of the 310 basis points decline in LALA's EBITDA margin, which finished the quarter at 8.3%. With margin gains in all the other regions, LALA's full-year margin expanded 10 basis points to just under 11%. At the bottom of the slide is a geographic breakdown of LALA's EBITDA at year-end. As you can see, Mexico accounted for 83%, while Brazil was 16% of our EBITDA at year-end. On slide 18 is a closer look at the expenses that weighed on Mexico's margin in the fourth quarter. Mexico's operating and production expenses increased 18.4% and 15.1%, respectively, pressuring gross and EBITDA margins due to overinvestment and disruptions within our operation, which Arquimedes and Alberto have noted. On this slide, we have listed the main concepts that have contributed to the 510 basis points decrease in Mexico's EBITDA margin. These expenses have grown above 25%. Costs related to Mexico's sales force, freight and transportation, as well as product waste, had the greatest margin impact. Please turn to slide 19. Fourth quarter controlling net income decreased 86% due to the substantially higher costs in Mexico that I just covered, but also due to an unfavorable comparison with fourth quarter 2018, when we realized a one-time tax benefit. However, in the third quarter of that year, this benefit was offset by a one-time tax penalty, which accounts for the much smaller year-over-year decline in full-year 2019 controlling net income, which was 3%. On a positive note, our effective tax rate decreased from 32.6% to 31.7% as we continue to work on reducing non-deductible expenses. Now please go to slide 20. LALA's leverage at the end of 2019 was 3x net debt to EBITDA, just below year-end 2018's level, with a slight sequential increase due to the decline in fourth quarter EBITDA. Please turn to slide 21. LALA maintains a healthy debt profile. As a reminder, last November, we issued in Mexico a dual tranche of long-term bonds, totaling 7 billion pesos, and refinanced in Brazil 40% of our debt in reais, using the refinancing to extend maturities and lower financial costs. Currently, the average duration of our peso-denominated debt is 5 years, and 2.7 years for our reais-denominated debt, which is 9% of total debt. Our weighted cost of total debt is 8.2%. Lastly, on this slide, 70% of LALA's debt is fixed, while 30% is variable. Please move to slide 22. We closed the year with a 0.6% working capital on sales ratio, 180 basis points below fourth quarter 2018. As you can see in this graph, we continue to secure more favorable terms from LALA's various suppliers. And as you can see on slide 23, the improvement in the consolidated figures has been mainly propelled by Mexico's results, as we benefited from another period of negative working capital in Mexico during the final quarter of 2019, reaching a 180 basis points improvement in comparison to the fourth quarter of 2018. Now please turn to slide 24. Our emphasis on ROIC-based decisions continued to benefit us during 2019. As a percentage of sales, our CapEx fell 100 percentage points compared to 2019 and 370 basis points since 2017. Now going to slide 25, it shows the marked improvement in ROIC since last year, although below our target level. Now please move to slide 26. Finally, as announced in early January, we reactivated our stock buyback program, taking advantage of the share price at the time and throughout the month. Since the announcement, we have acquired 8.5 million shares for a total of close to 1 billion pesos in our balance sheet. That concludes our review of Lala's fourth quarter and 2019 financial results. Before we move to the Q&A session of this call, Alberto has some summary remarks to share with you. Alberto, back to you.
Thanks, Dave. In summary, Lala's core strengths remain. We possess strong brands and have unmatched refrigerated distribution network in Mexico. Leadership in the dairy category and production capabilities that also give us distinct competitive advantages. As Archimedes emphasized, we will continue executing against our growth strategy, prioritizing Mexico for the time being and adjusting our pace of execution in this country. Our immediate priority is to stabilize our operations in Mexico and to recover profitability in this business. We also plan to continue sustaining a working capital ratio improvement throughout the geographies where Lala operates. As regards to leverage, we remain committed to the goal of standing below 2.5 times net debt on EBITDA. In terms of investment, we will continue being ROIC obsessed and will endeavor to improve returns on capital. That concludes our review of Lala's fourth quarter of full year results. Thank you for your time. Operator, please open the line for Q&A.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now be conducting the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. The confirmation tone will indicate that your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Our first question comes from Hector Maya with Santander Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking questions, which come from me and from Alan Alanis, who joined Santander recently. And the first one is related to the strategic implications of moving from a dairy to a nutrition-focused company, as mentioned by Archimedes. And I also wanted to know if you could further explain the disruptions you mentioned from Mexico, and if you could be considering a change in the strategy here, not only to prevent these disruptions in the future, but also to understand if there will be products maybe or categories that you won't be pushing as strongly as before in Mexico because your efforts could be focused somewhere else. And after that, I would have a follow-up.
Yes. Hola, Hector, we're having a hard time listening to your line. Would you mind re-asking the question again a little bit slower, please?
Yes, sorry. You hear me better here now?
A little bit better.
Yeah, sorry. Wanted to know what are the strategic implications of moving from a dairy to a nutrition focused company? That was number one. And number two, if you could explain the disruptions you mentioned from Mexico a little bit further, and if you are considering a change in strategy in Mexico, not only to prevent these disruptions in the future, but to understand if you have in mind products and categories that maybe you won't be pushing as strongly as before, because you could see some other categories that you could focus more here in Mexico.
Yes, Hector, sure. Well, first of all, in terms of implications from what we've been saying in terms of the strategy from dairy to nutrition, at the end of the day, this is something that will not change. The company has been working on nutrition categories for the 6 decades that it has been there. The idea of, I would say, exploring versus dairy is pretty much to be able to follow what the consumers are doing. And while we are and we have launched with some of our brands, for instance, alternative drinkable, which we were, I would say, important in supporting last year, such as Almond Breeze and our own Lala Vita products. Those are a couple of examples of what we mean when we say it's not only dairy, but it's really nutrition. But certainly building on our, I would say, cornerstone capabilities in dairy. That's a little bit of, you know, how to address your first question. On the second question, in terms of the, you know, interruptions we have in operation and also in the supply chain, as we shared with you back in Q3, we had some particular issues in one of our plants in Torreón. Those issues are fixed now, but they were still, I would say, hurting us in October, November, and December. But I would say most particularly, we have, as previously mentioned, we had a disruption in our supply chain by, I would say, moving a little bit more aggressively than we should have in terms of pushing sales ahead of the demand. So we were very focused on our sell out. We're not necessarily being, I would say, careful about we were focusing on sell in. We're not that closely monitoring sell out. And this created an important disruption in our overall supply chain. That led to additional transportation costs. That led as well to some additional waste in our supply chain. And that disrupted, importantly, our visibility to plan ahead production. So this is something that I would say happened mostly during the second part of the year. So we will not do, as you were asking, this doesn't imply a change of strategy. It just implies working on the basics, get back to managing dairy as it should have been done from the first place, from a supply chain standpoint. Now, in terms of your third question on the different categories and are we doing some switch regarding supporting one or another. The answer is no. We continue focusing on driving in our core competence, which is certainly milk. Milk still accounts for 2/3 of our volume and sales. We continue supporting subcategories in terms of premiumization when we see an opportunity, such as Ala 100. We have 40% of our portfolio in the Nutri brand, which certainly helped us in this, economic condition or situation. Remember that we have milk that or milk offering that goes from 14.9 all the way to 26. So in terms of product portfolio, milk certainly can offer consumers a low entry point and certainly a high end point. But also the value-added dairy categories where we compete, cheese, cream, yogurt, desserts are certainly ones that we want to keep focusing on, that we want to keep leveraging in terms of innovation, and that constitute an important part of our portfolio. So the answer is no. We're not expecting any substantial change to our strategy in Mexico when it comes to categories where we compete.
Got it. Perfect. And that's very helpful. And I also wanted to know, regarding my second question, would be on Brazil, could you explain the outlook for the supply conditions there? And I don't know, for example, do you hedge your supply volumes and prices? And how far in advance is that? And also wanted to know, how are your negotiations going with your main milk suppliers? And how are you planning on achieving a margin beyond 8% in Brazil in the medium term, especially if you consider that milk prices could continue being an issue that you can't entirely control? And what do these practices would reflect on your long-term guidance in terms of EBITDA margins here?
Yes, Hector. Let me see if I understood well your question. Your first question, again, basically is related to the interruption and the issues we had in supply chain. You know, to explain this in a simple term is basically we were doing some push at certain points during the month, hoping, I would say, for the consumer to increase its buy and intake of yogurt, cheese, milk. At the end of the day, I would say we have a very mature category where the consumption is not necessarily increasing because of the push, and this created an important disruption in our supply chain. Secondly, and this is something that I haven't mentioned, but the reality is that when you look at the number of innovation and the number of new products and the number of product propositions we came up to in the second part of the year, so in the second semester, notably Sabores de Mexico and some of the things we did in September, we also learned that this created a very important complexity in the supply chain that didn't necessarily lead to additional sales. It didn't lead to additional consumption, and it did lead to important issues in terms of operations, complexity of our portfolio, confusion in certain places from the consumer standpoint, and at the end of the day, product waste. So that's a little bit of what happened in terms of operations during the second part of the year. Then you also mentioned about not only the interruption issues, but also the margin, I would say, challenges in Mexico. And as we also have some important investment ahead of sales growth done during the first part of the year and throughout the end, notably when it comes to headcount in terms of salespeople, when it comes to marketing investments, and when it comes to also a certain additional routes which we acquire during the second part of the year. All of that, and this actually is linked to your third question, but it's something that we cannot fix from one quarter to another. It's something structural. This is going to take us, I would say, a couple of quarters to, I would say, get back into normality, into what we think it's a lean organization and what we think is more kind of an effective and a lean portfolio overall. Now, regarding your third question about the negotiation with our related parties and milk suppliers, one of the things that we shared with you guys last year was the fact that we now have a very transparent, and we've always had, but now at least we have shared with you openly, on the way we are calculating the cost pressure on our milk price, basically, on our milk cost. This is related to certain variables that have to do with how certain prices, certain inflation, and the strengthening of the peso is doing. Our negotiations are done at the beginning of the fourth quarter of each year. And we're not expecting any, I would say, disruption to what we have shared or to what we have been telling you last year. So nothing to say, I would say, additionally in terms of the negotiation with the related parties.
Sorry, thanks. I didn't want to interrupt you because that's very helpful, but I was referring to Brazil. Brazil, maybe you didn't hear me very well, wanted to know that the outlook for the supply conditions in Brazil and if the price pressure you're seeing in milk here in Brazil, you cannot entirely control that. How are you planning on achieving a margin beyond 8% in Brazil in the medium term? Or if you're doing something in terms of negotiations with your meat suppliers to try to offset that pressure?
Sorry, Hector. So your question is the bill. Okay, yeah. So I think that helps an additional perspective on how the meat is going to be executed. In any case, yes, we have seen a much more volatile market than what we originally expected. There was important, I would say, mismatch in 2018. In 2019, we are seeing the prices 10%. So, yes, this is certainly a market which we cannot control. It's certainly a market which can hardly be influenced. And the only way, I would say, to make sure we can be profitable in Brazil is to continue driving operational excellence, a portfolio that is affordable to most parts of the population, and continue driving the assets, I would say, in terms of where the bigger brand stands. So driving sales in Parmesan cheese, driving sales in yogurt, both in Greek and in the value segment, and continue driving towards an improved product mix. But the reality in Brazil is that the way we will increase our EBITDA needs to be through acceleration of the top line. EBITDA massification will come from the acceleration of sales. The margins that we are currently having, which was 4.7%, I would say like for like and without one-offs, needs to be certainly improved to the levels we were having in 2019 and 18. Going beyond that, with the current economic, I would say, turn down in Brazil, together with the pressure in meat, I think would be a little bit aggressive to think at this point in time. So we are targeting high single digit margin in Brazil for the meat and short term.
Got it. Excellent. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Benjamin Toyer with Barclays. Please proceed with your question.
Hey, good morning, Archimedes, and I guess welcome back. So I have a question. I mean, obviously you've identified all the issues during the quarter. You took necessary steps. Now, the question is, I mean, with overspending in people and sales force and marketing, how easy is it to scale that back, and how much of that, call it more the sticky cost, is still going to be somewhat carried over into the first quarter? Or have you taken already all the measures needed to basically be back to, call it a more normal level of spending relative to where sales is for the first quarter? That will be my first question. I have one quick follow-up after that.
Yes. Hi, Benjamin. This is Alberto. Benjamin, as I was mentioning, this is certainly something that we cannot do from one quarter to the other. It can be rapidly scaled up. It doesn't necessarily can be rapidly scaled down. This is something that will take us probably between 3 quarters to 4 quarters to fully, achieve it to the levels we believe are sustainable. the operational part of the equation and the disruption in the supply chain might take a little bit less than that, but to the full extent in terms of what we need, sales capabilities, additional transportation and so on, it certainly take three to four quarters.
3 to 4 quarters. Okay. And then just out of curiosity, so we had the disruption in one of your plants, which was also mentioned, and apologize for that if you may have mentioned it at the beginning of the call. I was a little late dialing in. Are those now fixed, the operational issues you've mentioned, October, November, December? Is that something at least that's behind us, or do you still experience certain, call it, hiccups at that one?
Hello, this is Archimedes. Yes, I can tell you that that particular problem is being solved, and we do not expect any more effects during this year. So the plan is completely under control.
Okay, so that one's done. All right, perfect. I'll leave it here, and thank you very much for taking my question.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Luca Cipizia with Goldman Sachs. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my question. I guess one point was just addressed in Ben's question. I was going to ask how long you expect it to take to normalize some of these investments impacts. But maybe, you know, shifting the approach here, there was quite a significant change at the end of last year, obviously the management change, the message that you are giving us today in terms of resizing some investments. But throughout 2019, arguably, there seemed to be quite a lot of excitement or quite a lot of dynamism around some of these initiatives. So my question is twofold. You know, what changed the company or the controlling group mind so quickly after supporting, you know, what was pretty evident, a large amount of changes? That's question number one. And question number two, what actually you think is going to be a positive legacy of some of these initiatives? Was it all bad, or is there something that you can see can still sort of play a role? Some of the let's say strategy that were being pitched seemed to make a lot of sense in terms of portfolio, in terms of mix, and I guess, you know, there are different degrees or different scales of gray on how you can push on some of this initiative. But maybe if you can spend a little bit of time of, you know, what's actually going to be carried forward to the future of that type of initiatives that we saw throughout last year. Thank you.
Yes, Luca. This is Alberto. Well, I would say two things change when you think at the reality of 2019 Mexico. The first one is certainly it was a year where growth didn't come from an economic standpoint. Much more pressure when you think about the realization for the consumer to acquire our products. And, you know, it was probably not a good year to overinvest in and selling capabilities, marketing capabilities. So that it has to be important with that. The second point is also it's related more to the expectations as well created. And when you looked at what happened in the Q3 results, what is happening now, you could probably much easier understand why the board decided to do what they did. So that's from your first point. The second one is, and, you know, Archimedes has mentioned that in his opening, but there are certainly a lot of things, a lot of good things that also happened during the last year. When you think about the way our culture was, I would say, fostered or taken to another level, when you see the strength of the current management team, when you think about the transparency we have been opening with the market, when you think about this idea of nutrition, I would say in addition to dairy, there are certainly many aspects that will stay and remain from what it has been done over the last year. At the end of the day as well, these were decisions that the board also approved and, I would say, endorsed. So nothing would change on that matter. So the good things will certainly stay.
Understood.
I don't know, Archimedes, if you want to add anything.
Yeah, this is Archimedes, and I would like to add that in terms of our strategy, this is not something new for Lala. Let me tell you that I have been in this company for the period of 2001 to 2015. By that time, we were a regional company focused only on Nordic. And since then, we defined our growth strategy, basically innovating our portfolio, taking advantage of the dairy adjacent categories to the milk, which were yogurt, cheese, cream, desserts. And also we expand our distribution all over Mexico. Of course, always looking to be efficient and to have an excellent execution in all channels. And besides that commercial strategy, we also focus on being more efficient. We completely restructure our production facilities. I can tell you that 85% of our processing facilities are state-of-the-art, and only two which are already being modified to be updated. But the rest of the processing capabilities of the company are in a very good shape. Besides that, Lala has always had a focus on innovation, and that was the way that we have transformed Lala from milk to a multi-category company.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, as the consumer evolves, the company is always maintained focus on those new trends of consumer behavior, and we will always continue studying the consumer and, of course, knowing the way our customers operate to be able to propose them the products that they are looking for and the needs they want to satisfy.
Understood. Thank you. Thank you both for the question. Just the answers. A quick follow-up, if I can. You mentioned earlier, 2019 was not a good year to overinvest. Can you give us your views on how you see 2020 may play out in terms of consumer context in Mexico, in terms of investment sort of planning? Maybe if you can share what are the areas that are you're more concerned about, and are you thinking about the year or the marketplace in Mexico for 2020?
Yes, I would say, are simply a little bit more optimistic than where we were in 2019. I think the context is such that many economists believe that the country will be growing in terms of GDP in the neighborhood of 1%. So this would certainly, I would say, foster or alleviate a little bit the growth concerns in terms of consumption. So on that front, we think it's certainly starting with a little bit of backwind on that front. In terms of what we plan to invest, we remain, I would say, very solidly confident that the country is going to be taking off eventually. So in terms of what we're doing in CapEx for maintenance and for organic growth, this is not changing. What we have normally invested in terms of marketing, in terms of investing in our brand capabilities, brand power, what we are doing in terms of sales, both at the point of sale and in terms of execution, it's pretty much to scale it down to historical levels, but we will certainly be investing accordingly in the country.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Antonio Gonzalez with Credit Suisse. Please proceed.
Good morning, guys. Thank you for taking my question. And Archimedes, also welcome back, and my best wishes for you on this new stage as CEO. I wanted to ask, you already shared your immediate priorities, no, Archimedes? And those were very clear, thank you for that. But I wanted to ask also if you can give us some perspective on the past, no? I mean, no need to talk about, you know, the previous management or anything along those lines, of course, but I, you know, a little bit connected to Luca's question, it was late September when the Lala Investor Day took place, right? And the plans for Mexico were super encouraging. It was described as, you know, a very bullish message with endorsement from the board and so on. From the numbers that we see this quarter, you know, there's a 3.7% growth in sales. And David shared with us these numbers of the 18% and 15% growth in operating and production expenses, respectively. No? So the question is, what are the internal controls that you think Archimedes, the board and management have in order to, you know, avoid this disparity in the future? I don't know if you can comment at all whether, you know, the management realized early in the quarter or very late during the quarter, and any further color you can give us in terms of, again, internal controls to avoid this in the future. And then I have a second question, but perhaps I'll stop here for now.
Let me give you my opinion on how I see this the situation of what happened in the company. I think that as happens frequently, when a CEO arrives to a company, there is always an excitement about the things that can be accomplished in any company, and I think that that has been the case here. Unfortunately, all that excitement should be first adapted to the a deep understanding of the sector and deep understanding also of the company. Because, you know, the company has the capability of implementation of strategies or capacity implementation for a new, let's say, rhythm or a higher speed of introducing new products in the market. I think that in general, one thing is to have very creative value propositions for the consumers, and a different thing is to be able to implement those ideas. So all that excitement and intentions of moving the company faster should be, let's say, balanced according to the capacity of the implementation that the company has. And if you do that, instead of analyzing first the sector and the company itself, you create a great and the company. And particularly when you manage refrigerated short life shell life products, like in our case. So as I said in the previous question, the strategy of Lala has been in place for many years, being characterized by introducing innovations into the market. And generally speaking, we have been very successful in growing the company and taking share in every category that we decide to participate. So here the question is that the point is to do all those activities at the right pace. That's my perception.
I see. Sorry, please go ahead.
So what we are trying now to do is to go back to the basic of the business. I strongly believe that the balance of taking care of the present problems of the present problems of the company, and at the same time being able to take a look at the future has to be balanced. I mean, we need to solve those problems. But today, because of the disruption that we have, we need to focus immediately in this coming back of the basic operation of the company. And that's what we have been doing here. You know, I arrived here in January. I have been very active in understanding all the changes that were implemented in the recent years, and try to understand as deep as possible what are the key changes and the key actions that we need to implement to move the company in the right direction to go back to the normal growth and profitability.
That's very clear. Thank you for your perspective, Archimedes. If I may, I had a quick second question. You know, obviously, the share price has suffered quite substantially, and I'm not asking you to make a statement on that at all. But I wanted to ask, you know, if in your conversations with the board and even with management, you think there's any, you know, sense of urgency beyond the buyback activity that you mentioned on the prepared remarks. You know, can you walk us through the merits that you see at the moment of maintaining the company as a publicly traded entity? Do you think there's any possibility? I understand there's a leverage constraint, right, given the 3x net debt to EBITDA ratio at the moment, but given also that we are, you know, significantly below the IPO price, with a much larger enterprise, right, with assets in the U.S. and Brazil and so on. Do you think there's any chance, you know, together with the board, look for strategic investors or accelerating the divestment of assets or any other alternative to, you know, take advantage of the share price where it is now and perhaps rethink whether having a publicly traded vehicle makes sense, or perhaps you know, in the private market it would, you know, be better suited at the moment.
The sense of urgency is shared from the board, the team, myself, of course, the sense of urgency, but that sense of urgency is completely focused in going back to the very good operation of the company that unfortunately we lost last year. All the other alternatives that you have mentioned are not really considering at this moment.
Okay, very clear. Thank you so much for your perspective, and again, best of luck on this role.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Fernando Olvera with Bank of America. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for taking my question. My first question is related to competition in Mexico. Last week, GEP, the Pepsi bottler in Mexico, announced that it will start distributing Alpura's favorite products on its traditional and direct-to-home channels across the country. So I would like to hear your thoughts on this, mainly if you think competition could intensify in coming months, mainly in the traditional channel now that the Pepsi bottler will have a greater product offering. That's the first one. I'll wait for the second one.
Yes. Hola, Fernando. Es Pietro. Listen, we have, as you know, our strength in the refrigerated distribution in Mexico, the biggest in the country in terms of chilling distribution. So, and this is where the core of Lala, I would say, remains as well. On that front, I believe we are doing what we need to do to gain in that market, gain on that segment. Some of the things that we implemented last year that I would say will certainly stay is we have been working a lot on the market segmentation, focusing on the most important customers in the detalle or the changarros or the mom-pop stores. And that presence is increasing in terms of distribution. So we believe that with that capability of distribution, our brand and so on, we are
well suited or well prepared to make front to what's happening with others and so on. So I believe there's not much more to comment on that front, rather than speaking about our own capabilities.
This is Archimedes. In addition of what Alberto just said, I would say that competition is not something new for us. Competition is not something new for us. So yes, in some way, as you said it, there will be an additional, let's say, partially, I would say, additionally product offering, because the fact that this company is now is going to be a distributor of that product doesn't mean that this is something new. They have been in the market, of course. Maybe they will have a greater presence, but not really something that I consider dramatically risky for us.
Great, thank you. And my second question is related to the U.S. business. I mean, in 2019, we witnessed a significant improvement in the profitability of the business. However, the dairy industry continues to struggle given lower consumption. So can you comment, what is your outlook of the dairy industry this year, and what will be your next step in the U.S. business in the short term? I mean, do you still have room to keep growing margins? And also, how do you expect the dairy industry to evolve after the Dairy Farmers of America agreed to buy Dean Food? Thanks.
Yes, Fernando. Let me make an important distinction in the business we're competing in the U.S. and what is happening with, I would say, white fluid milk. If you look at the market, white fluid milk business in the U.S., this has been more commoditized business over the last couple of decades. When you think about the power of the brands there, vis-a-vis what the retail has as well in terms of private business, it really leaves room to, I would say, very pressured margins and not a lot of room to branding and value-added dairy. Now, conversely, if you think about the big players in the market of yogurt, I would not name them, but the market leader and number two, these are brands and these are products where they command good margins. They invest heavily on the brands and they have a good distribution and operation. So really, what is happening in the fluid liquid milk in the U.S. and what's happening in the value-added dairy in the U.S. are completely two different stories. And we compete on the latter. If you think about the potential we have to still grow in the biggest dairy market in the planet, where we stand today, even when drinkable yogurt and our presence there make us the adult category leader, drinkable yogurt in the U.S. still accounts for only 10% of the overall market, yogurt market in the U.S. Just for comparison, in countries such as Mexico, Brazil, you can get that category to as much as half of what the consumers are eating or drinking. So the potential is there. We believe our brands are very well positioned, especially with the Hispanic community. You were asking us about our strategy and what are the next steps in terms of potential and category growth. We are refocusing our strategy growth in drinkable yogurt in that segment, especially and notably in seven cities in the U.S. where we have an important Hispanic population. We are also, I would say, doing some things in terms of our cream portfolio. We have, as you know, streamlined our portfolio in our premium milk, which, at the end of the day, half of it is flavored milk, Promised Land, which also has a very different price point index versus the white milk in the U.S., where, again, brand is recognized and valued from a consumer standpoint. So, with the current level of margins and operations, we're happy that we're not in red anymore. The name of the game in the U.S. is to keep driving volume, to keep driving sales, and to make sure that that can eventually convert into a higher leverage and therefore utilization of our assets and expansion of margin.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Alberto.
On the contrary, Fernando.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Miguel Tortolero with GBM. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for the questions. The first one is on working capital. I mean, it has been clear that you have made some improvements that have actually been the driver of some cash generation. And while those we have seen some improvements on your receivables, a big chunk of them have come from suppliers, from milk suppliers. So just would like to understand the sustainability of these improvements and how much more room you see for further improvements on this front. And the second one that I haven't been answered because I had some trouble with the sound quality with the first bunch of questions, but you have already, the second one is, you have shared that you expect the spend disruption to continue for at least 3 to 4 quarters before profitability figures could reach more normalized levels again. But could you share more sensibility on your expectations, especially for this year? I mean, should it be a similar year to 2019 in terms of profitability, or probably weaker given that the expense disruption came in the second half of the year? Thank you.
Yes. Hola, Miguel. Regarding your first question in terms of working capital, you know, when you think about what we have done and basically the key leverage of that turnaround, Lala was a company that was not leveraged in the past, and you know we didn't have a leveraged balance sheet, and therefore the, I would say, focus and pressure on improving working capital was not necessarily there. Today, this is a survival mode in that front, and we need to make sure that the capital invested in the company is well paying off its cost of capital. So we did, I would say, a very significant progress over the last 3 years in working capital in Mexico specifically. We did some improvements not only in payables, but also in the way we were collecting our money, receivables. I would say we have done a slight improvement in inventory. Still, we might have some room to go there, but again, very modest. And I believe that we have done what we wanted to do in terms of payables. We don't foresee, important improvements coming on further down the road. The good thing is that we did that in a very organized fashion. Focusing on the most important categories, moving to, try to consolidate some of our supplier base as well by simplifying our materials portfolio and so on. So that's, I would say those moves are sustainable. Those moves have been done and now are part of our structural way of working. Now, I cannot say that for the rest of the regions. I believe in the rest of the regions, in Brazil, in the U.S., and in Central America, we can still reapply in a way what we have done in Mexico. But then again, remember that 75% of the size of the company is Mexico. So I would not expect important changes to the way the working capital on sales ratio is currently profiling. But we have some opportunities in other regions? The answer is yes. Would this move the needle? Probably not from a consolidated standpoint. So that's for your first question. Then in terms of your second question, I would rather not provide a guidance for this year. It is something that, as you know, and Archimedes said, we are solely focused on making sure that we can scale down those investments on one hand, making sure that we can keep growing the business on a more simplified approach in terms of new products, innovation, and so on. Archimedes haven't mentioned that, but, he has been insisting internally on the fact that we do have some important opportunities with our current portfolio, with our existing portfolio. Some of our categories have not reached a distribution level that is aimed to be for that, for the power of our brand, for the quality of our products, and so on. So refocusing on those, I would say, opportunities internally without adding additional complexity into the market and the innovation pipeline should certainly help us to serve that wave in the next couple of quarters. But again, it will take a couple of quarters to get back to normal, I would say, supply chain and planning both.
All right, that's fair enough. Thank you, Beto.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Felipe Ucros with Scotiabank. Please proceed with your question.
Yes, good morning, Arquimedes and team. Thanks for the space for questions. But I want to ask you around that's a bit more on the strategic side. And I apologize if some of this has been asked. I got disconnected a couple of times. But I, you know, when I go back and I think about the big achievements that the company did over the last few years, I think there are three that come to mind that are really important to investors. I think transparency has improved quite a bit. I also think that independence of the company, and it had been a big criticism for the market. I think over. Yes.
Can you hear me? Felipe, hi. Hola, Felipe. It's Beto. Felipe, we are having a very hard time on listening clearly to what you are asking. Could you try to get closer to the mic and speak slower, please?
Yes, of course. Can you hear me better here?
Yes, a little bit better.
Hello? A little bit. Okay. Apologies. I'm on the road, so I have a terrible signal. So I was asking you about three big changes that have been very important from an investor's point of view, which have been transparency, independence, and ownership. How do you guys think about those changes that came about in the last few years, and how do you think about those going forward?
Yes, Felipe, just we are team backing here just to make sure that we understood well your question. Your first question is whether or not we would scale back to what we have done in terms of transparency. Is that correct?
Yes. So three things: transparency, independence, ownership. How do you think about those going forward?
Okay, transparency, independence, and ownership.
And
I'm going to employ you on this. Yeah. Yes, this is Arquimedes. Thank you for your question. In terms of transparency, we will continue what we have been doing in the past. So you can, you will have that information as it has been presented in all the our reports. In terms of the question about the independence, let me tell you that Lala, as any other public company, has a clear and defined roles and decision limits for the CEO, the chairman, and of course the board. So those roles are being there and will continue being there. No changes at all. And in terms of your question about the employee ownership, I know that you are aware of the plans that have been developed here to keep our key personnel in the company and having that company attractive for them. Those plans will continue in place. No changes to that.
Mr. Levy, do you have any additional questions at this time? Thank you. It appears we have no additional questions, so I'd like to pass the floor back over to Mr. Gonzalez for any additional concluding comments.
Thank you, operator. And thank you, everyone, for joining our results call today. We look forward to talking to you on our next quarterly call. Have a good day.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's event. We thank you for your participation, and you may disconnect your lines at this time.